Support for this KQED podcast comes from Walmart Labs, based in Silicon Valley. Powered by its own open source technology, Walmart Labs engineers code in an agile DevOps environment. Learn more about engineering and big data positions at walmartlabs.com.
Support for the California Report comes from Stanford Children's Health. Stanford Medicine pediatric specialists are at 45 locations throughout Northern California. More at stanfordchildrens.org. Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. And Digital Foundry, building digital capabilities for leading organizations around the world. More online at digitalfoundry.com.
It is that time of year already. Summer, just about over. Kids, heading back to school. Today on the California Report, how some big changes in academic standards will affect the littlest students in kindergarten. Then how a kind of algebra boot camp gets African-American kids interested in math.
They're learning orders of operations, exponents, fractions, algebraic expressions. They've learned the lattice method. They've learned Egyptian numerals.
Also, it's been a year since a big quake shook up California wine country.
All the walls fell down in the main part of the house last year, and I was about 45 days from being done and had to basically lock it up and put the key away for about 8 to 9 months.
12 months later, how a very local front porch music event is helping bring Napa together.
So we want people involved in historic preservation and, you know, saving our structures and seeing these old houses in these great neighborhoods, but seeing it in a different light.
I'm Scott Schaefer, and this is the California Report. The new school year is upon us, and as parents drop their kids off at kindergarten the first few times, it can be, well, a little traumatic. There are often tears on both sides of that transaction, to be sure. That's nothing new. But there is something new for kindergartners in California this year. They're going to have to learn how to read at a higher level than they did before. That's because the academic standards known as Common Core are kicking in. And KQED's education reporter Anna Tintakalis takes a look at how all that will affect the state's littlest learners.
6-year-old Mateo Long is a soft-spoken, shy little boy. This afternoon, he's curled up on his mother's lap on their living room couch.
Do you want to say hello?
Hi, my name is Mateo.
One thing that gets Mateo talking is reading with his mom, Marissa Strong. She picks up his favorite book. Mateo's big brown eyes follow along as mom points to the words.
Pete the cat and the bad banana.
Yes, that's Pete the Cat and the Bad Banana.
Pete tries
a pickle.
It is
long like a banana.
It's better, but not as good as a
banana.
That's right.
Mateo will be going into kindergarten this year, and he'll be a little older than most kids in his class. But still, Marissa is worried. The Oakland mom knows, under the state's new academic standards, Mateo will have to read at a higher level before moving on to first grade.
And I'm not going to fight it, you know. I don't want to go out there and argue with. I want to give it a try. Let's just kind of not try to expect them to do everything perfectly all the time.
The standards now call for kindergartners to learn more vocabulary words and read short sentences fluently. Teachers will also have to do more with informational books and do less with all those fun storybooks. So instead of reading Frog and Toad, they might opt for a science book all about frogs.
That actually is a really good thing, I believe.
Kristen Cruz Allen is a state education official. She says before, kids moved on to first grade if they could sound out letters and read basic words like cat, mop, and the. But Cruz Allen says research shows college students and workers now need a deeper level of literary analysis. And she says that should start when they're kindergartners.
They actually can do it, and it's really making them think critically about the text that they're reading and preparing them for later when they're going to write arguments with text evidence and that sort of thing.
folders. We do homework folders. We have math folders. I have writing folders.
Renee Smith is a kindergarten teacher in Fremont near Oakland. School starts in just a few days, and she's prepping her classroom. Smith and other teachers get why the state is making the switch, but she's concerned about the kids who didn't go to preschool, speak another language at home, or kids who simply need more time to grasp the new concepts.
What would be nice is if we didn't have to put an evaluation on them. If you could just say, he's just not there yet. I think that that's just a powerful statement.
Smith and others say the reality is kindergarten has become a boot camp for first grade lately. And with the new standards, that means even less free time to explore and play.
You don't want to turn them off to school at age five. That's the hardest part, is how do you still make it fun and want them to come back every day?
One expert who's all about putting the fun back into lesson plans is Heidi Butkus. The veteran teacher has created her own Common Core aligned curriculum, including this song about the color yellow.
Y-E-L-L-O-W. Play develops language and vocabulary better than any lesson you can give them.
She says the problem with the new standards is that teachers take them too literally and suck the fun and imagination out of the school day. She says some teachers don't know how to bring play back into the classroom.
We don't know how to do it anymore. You know, we've lost that skill, so we got to figure out, what does that look like? Does it mean you just turn the kids loose and let them play all day? No, it's directed play.
Marissa Strong knows there's no avoiding these new standards for her son, Mateo.
Grumpy Toad says,
they are my favorite, so Pete does.
I'm just happy that he's engaged, that he's trying to sound out the words. I mean, there's probably kids that are like reading straight through. I mean, that would be great, but, you know, it'll come.
But it has to come soon. For Mateo and all kindergartners, there's no luxury of waiting. If they don't start reading this year, they could fall behind in first grade. For the California Report, I'm Yana Tentakulis.
Now we head toward the other end of the K through 12 years. Middle schoolers who'd like to pursue a career in engineering, well, they'd better know their math. In fact, sometimes shaky math skills prevent a lot of kids from even getting into college at all. KPCC's Adolfo Guzman Lopez paid a visit to a summer algebra boot camp where educators have two ways to turn students around.
For most of the summer, a group of 20, mostly African-American teenagers, have been in this classroom at a church youth center in South L.A. Tamara Lewis is their teacher.
X is the unknown number. We've been doing multiplication, division, all kind of stuff, but now we're using symbols instead of the numbers.
It's a four-day-a-week, five-hour-a-day algebra boot camp. It's part of a program funded by the California State University. 12-year-old Elise Wilson-Gittens is one of the students. She blames the transition to middle school last year for her low grade in math.
Well, in sixth grade, I don't think I did as well because it was my first year getting used to all of the classes, switching classes, going from one class to the next, to the next, to the next.
She got stuck on addition and subtraction of fractions with different denominators. And it didn't help that school felt like a factory assembly line.
Every 5 seconds, it's your teacher yelling at you and, oh, well, you did it wrong. Well, you never taught me right.
According to the California Department of Education, African Americans last year had the lowest pass rate of any ethnic group on the math portion of the high school exit exam. That worries educators. Only 2 years of math is required for a high school diploma, but admission to a university requires at least 3 years of math. The focus of the boot camp is to prepare students to do well in algebra in the eighth or ninth grade. To do that, teacher Lewis reviews basic concepts.
They're learning orders of operations, exponents, fractions, algebraic expressions. That's what they were doing recently. They've learned the lattice method. They've learned Egyptian numerals.
That African reference is important. It's part of this program's effort to connect these students to their culture. Teachers tell students that without their ancestors, there would be no math as we know it. And they have fun, too.
Okay, since you have worked so hard, I told you we were going to do an activity today. So do you guys want to play the number game?
Yes!
It's a team game in which the teacher calls out a six or seven-digit number, and each team scrambles to hold up the numbers in the right order.
5,328. You should be lining up. 5,328.
Got it.
The Summer Algebra Institute was held at 18 African-American churches this summer, from Sacramento to Whittier. The California State University says each site enrolled 550 students. Jacqueline Mims is an administrator at Cal State Bakersfield. She helped found the program in 2009.
This was a way to get students academically prepared so that they can complete the math sequence in 4 years in high school. That way they're guaranteed access to college.
Mims says despite the help students get during the summer, they often return to public schools that aren't meeting their needs. She hopes one day the students can get additional help throughout the school year. For Elise Wilson-Gittens, the boot camp was about laying the groundwork for what she wants to be when she grows up, a doctor. She says a conversation with her mother convinced her to enroll in the algebra class.
And I'm like, why is math important to doctoring? Isn't it just science and like putting band-aids on things? And my mom's like, no, math is very important in doctoring.
She finished the Summer Algebra Institute last week and starts 7th grade next week. For the California Report, I'm Adolfo Guzman Lopez in Los Angeles.
A year ago next week, the bucolic Napa Valley was jolted awake by a 6.0 magnitude earthquake. One person died, hundreds were injured, and a bunch of historic buildings were pretty badly damaged. Now, Napa is still recovering in some ways, but the disaster also showed the town's resilience. A few weeks ago, the best of Napa was on display in their version of what's become a national phenomenon. It's called Porch Fest. And as Andrew Stelzer reports, it's been so successful that local leaders are trying to keep it as quiet and local as they can.
If I told you about a music festival with 116 bands, you'd probably think of Coachella or Lollapalooza. But what if I mentioned this festival had 59 different stages? And that it was all free.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for coming. All right, have a great time.
Rachel Clark helped start Napa Porch Fest 5 years ago. The idea was to showcase local music on people's front porches and yards. Today, she's handing out maps to help navigate the dozens of venues.
The first year, we all had butterflies in our stomach that morning. We're like, what if only like 250 people showed up? And it ended up being more like 2,500.
This year, attendance topped 12,000, despite an intentional lack of promotion outside the local area. To play here at Napa Porch Fest, at least one member of the band must live in Napa County. Even the food trucks have to be local. The basic premise of the Porch Fest concept, which was born in Ithaca, New York in 2007, is to get neighbors out, meeting each other and learning about their local culture.
For us, it's a little more relaxed than our usual big shows where in front of, you know, thousands of people.
Izzy Holokai sings and plays ukulele for Blessed Love Gospel Reggae, a 10-piece band which just finished a set out in front of their keyboardist's house.
People here live right down the road from each other. So at least they know now whenever they walk or drive past this house, hey man, that's the guy that was in that reggae band.
I'm standing in the middle of a five-way intersection at Randolph and Division and 5th Street, and I can hear music coming from at least three different directions, people crowded in front of porches and spilling out into the street. I'm going to go over to this beautiful-looking old Victorian with a band playing on the porch and see what's happening there.
Well, baby used to stay out all night long.
It's a great place to come and listen to music, and it doesn't cost anything, so you can't beat that.
Joe Bereka is watching a band called Powerglide play on the porch of a house which dates from the late 1800s. It's being restored by Lauren Ackerman to become a local heritage museum of sorts. But her plans hit a major speed bump when last year's earthquake hit.
All the walls fell down in the main part of the house last year, and I was about 45 days from being done and had to basically lock it up and put the key away for about 8 to 9 months.
The Porch Fest Planning Committee had been urging Ackerman to participate for several years. Napa County Landmarks, a local nonprofit, is the event's fiscal sponsor. They see these live performances as a way to bring the town's beautiful old houses to life.
The music changes everything.
Landmarks director Stacy DeShazo.
We want people involved in historic preservation and saving our structures and seeing these old houses in these great neighborhoods, but seeing it in a different light.
Napa City Council member Juliana Inman is also chair of the Porch Fest committee.
We've done house tours for 30 or 40 years, and we do bicycle tours of historic neighborhoods. We do all kinds of ways, and this has by far been the most effective way to get lots of people into our historic neighborhoods and appreciate them.
Inman has also helped other communities who are trying to start their own Porch Fest, including the town of Carmel, Indiana. Here in California, San Francisco's Noe Valley and Mission Districts held their inaugural Porch Fest this year, and the town of Gilroy is holding its second one this September. For the California Report, I'm Andrew Stelzer in Napa.
Sometimes California passes a ballot measure that ends up having very little impact. That is not the case with Proposition 47, which changed many nonviolent crimes from felonies to less serious misdemeanors. It also lets some ex-offenders petition the courts to remove past felonies from their records. Now, voters approved Prop 47 overwhelmingly, and you could see its impact right away. A lower prison population, and some critics say, a higher crime rate. But there's also been a very personal impact, people getting a second chance, as Marisa Lagos from KQED's California Government and Politics Desk found out.
To get a felony reduced, someone has to petition a judge. Since November, the courts have received more than 160,000 petitions. Community groups and even some radio stations have been helping get the word out.
Do you have a nonviolent felony on your record that's holding you back? Ever been denied a job, loan, or housing because of it? A new law in California could help you change your record and your life.
Change your life. That's exactly what 21-year-old Tafala Mayfield has been able to do. His life began unraveling in his teens after his grandmother suffered a stroke and his mother fell back into drug addiction. Sitting at the kitchen table in the San Francisco home where he grew up, Mayfield says his run-ins with the law didn't seem that big of a deal at the time.
Before, like, when I was a minor, I caught a few felonies, but it was, like, petty felonies, you know what I mean? Vandalism, you know, like graffiti and stuff, you know?
Then Mayfield turned 18 and racked up another felony, this time for stealing an iPhone. He served a month in jail, and when he got out, he started applying for jobs.
I didn't get any calls back. I'd call them back. They'd, our hiring manager's not in, you know? You know, I just had a feeling that's what it was, you know, just me having, you know, the felony on my record and stuff.
Mayfield's probation officer urged him to call the public defender, who then filed a petition under Prop 47. Within a month, Mayfield's felonies were reduced to misdemeanors. He now has two jobs.
You know, I was just very grateful for all that. You know, I was really happy. You know, I don't have to check in with my probation officer anymore or anything, you know.
Mayfield's story is a familiar one to Vincent Andrade. He's the chief deputy public defender in Merced County. He says so many former felons are asking about Prop 47, his office has had to turn people away from a weekly legal clinic. Andrade says an old felony can stigmatize people for the rest of their lives, preventing them from getting jobs, financial aid, even housing.
What does it lead you to not seek out? Because you don't think you'll even accomplish what you're trying to do. It really takes away a person's initiative if they don't think they have a future.
Sholanda Jackson says she's finally creating a better future for herself and her son.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Jackson is dropping off her 8-year-old at drum lessons before heading into work at an Oakland nonprofit. It's a remarkable turnaround for a woman who spent her 20s addicted to crack and was in and out of prison 13 times.
People said I was hopeless, right? The parole officer, the parole board, I was in prison. They said, oh, she's hopeless, but... that's not true. I don't think there's a such thing.
Now she's been sober 11 years. She's married, raising her son in Hayward, and recently earned her bachelor's degree. She hopes to pursue a master's. And she's working to get all her past drug felonies knocked down to misdemeanors. Jackson says clearing those felonies will allow her to pursue all of her dreams.
God, wouldn't that be just, like, wonderful? Like, So even though right now it's not affecting me as far as work, but when I get my master's degree, what if I want to go work for the VA or for Kaiser? I'm sure it'll come up.
Jackson hopes the changes she's making will help her family break the cycle of poverty and addiction. For the California Report, I'm Marisa Lagos.
An earthquake rattles the Bay Area, wildfires across the state, and now news that the Central Valley is sinking.
Water, Mr. Rango. Water.
It's not all related to the drought, but a lot of it is. And so KQED science editor Craig Miller is here for our regular check-in. And Craig, let's start with, before we get to all that stuff, let's start with a bit of rare good news on the drought front, at least for the Southland.
Yeah, you know, we've all been focused so much on the snowpack or lack of snowpack this year and lack of precipitation that sometimes, Scott, I think we lose sight of the fact that there's also been a long-standing drought in the Colorado River, which is a major supplier of water, at least for Southern California. Lake Mead, the huge reservoir near Las Vegas there, has been right on the brink of triggering automatic cuts, mostly for Nevada and Arizona, but this would be a first ever kind of occurrence. And yet, they had these weird spring rains in the upper basin, and they've noticed that the other big reservoir, Lake Powell, upstream, has started to refill. And that's brought a kind of a reprieve. Officials now say that water supplies from the Colorado should be basically good to go for at least another year, maybe two.
Wow, so a case of abnormal weather being helpful.
Yeah, long term, there's still a problem on the Colorado. Don't make any mistake about it.
Yeah. Well, while Lake Powell is rising, the Central Valley is sinking and fast. And NASA, in fact, released some really colorful maps this week to prove it.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, this is because the farms have become so dependent on pumping groundwater because a lot of them have no surface water. So we're sticking more straws in the ground. Ground begins to collapse. If you've ever had a wet sponge and thrown it on the counter in the sun, you see when it dries, it shrivels up, right?
Yeah.
Same thing is happening underground with these aquifers. And so now with remote sensing, satellites and flyovers, NASA's been able to sort of map this. And they saw the San Joaquin Valley sinking at a record pace, 2 inches per month in some places.
Wow.
And the actual water table, you know, where is the water underground, is down in some spots 100 feet from its previous lows.
So, and we still don't really know how much groundwater has been taken, right? That's a whole other issue.
And these measurements are from last year, so you can imagine it's probably that much worse.
Yeah, and
now,
so the consequences of all that, Craig, are what?
Once some of those aquifers collapse after they've been desiccated, essentially, they don't necessarily come back.
Hmm.
You know,
even if we get a ton of water.
Not like the sponge. You know, they just don't soak up water again when it starts raining necessarily. And so you lose that storage potentially forever.
And Craig, there were also some new numbers this week on the drought's impact on California's ag industry, which is quite huge. And the numbers are a little counterintuitive.
Yeah, this is one of those. This could be we got to stick with the water metaphors, right? This could be a glass half empty or half full. The analysts at UC Davis have fine-tuned their estimate. They say the impacts are, on the one hand, worse than last year, maybe 10,000 jobs, $1.8 billion in costs to the ag economy. But the whole ag economy in California is $46 billion and, in spite of everything, continues to grow.
Craig Miller is KQED science editor and our in-house drought maven. Craig, thanks a lot.
You bet, Scott.
And finally today, Bicicletas por la Paz is a band of Bay Area bicycle activists. And according to the California Report's pop music critic, Steve Hockman, with them, you get two kinds of revolutions and a lot to make you dance.
Bicicletas por la Paz sounds like the kind of thing people make fun of the Bay Area for. It's a bicycle advocacy and awareness collective that's serving healthy meals from its People's Kitchen and building a center for displaced people in Colombia. Oh, and there's the smoothie stand, blended using pedal power, of course. So with all that, the thought of them being a band, too, might have you rolling your eyes. Not so fast.
Never tried to check me out. Never tried to check his brakes. Never tried to see if I'm all right. Splash me in the eye from a puddle. Better than a gun. Still, I was a case on the hit and run. Take my life. Leave me for dead. Brush aside.
Gigante Elefante is about the perils of dodging cars while on two wheels, which doesn't sound like fun. And yet it's a typically frisky and accomplished highlight from the debut album, Musica por Puppets. Throughout, there's a mix of South American angled funk, ska, reggae, rock en español, and even some credible rap. The Bicicletas are a self-described group of musicians, cyclists, circus performers, visual artists, hooligans, and environmentalists united to fight corporate power over people and the environment. Fortunately, the eight-piece, led by guitarist Adley Penner and sporting a rotating cast of four singers, understands that the best way to further that mission, musically speaking, is to get people to sing and dance. So the material, by and large, is not specifically topical, but more celebrations and examinations of grassroots spirit. On the Clock, an ode to life in the daily grind, has a dark cheerleading quality, a bit reminiscent of England's exuberant Go team. They do, though, get really topical with Righteous Fire on Fruitvale. Referencing the 2009 police shooting of young African-American Oscar Grant on a BART platform, the song lives up to the Johnny Rotten maxim, anger is an energy. Sprawling over 6 minutes, it moves from slow simmer prologue to full-on catharsis manifest in roiling ska, and then into quasi-theatrical rage. Firebomb the building, plastic guns and tanks and ammunition, semi-automatic weapons made for war fanatic. Don't stoop to the level of brutality. It's a virgin of a crowd control. May they ever man down, lay down your arms and give up your guns. Don't stoop to the level of insanity, cause they know how to bang on the drum. The heavy intensity of that works because it's buoyed by the lightheartedness of free spirits elsewhere. A sense that they feel that anything can be accomplished if they just get on two wheels and ride, literally or metaphorically. It's a people-powered revolution. The activism, the politics, the worldview, all spokes on one hub. Something held forth in what is more or less the Bicicletas por la Paz anthem, the album's very first, very joyous song, Vámonos Ciclista. Vámonos Ciclista, mueve la cosita, pedalea la mañana hasta la tardecita. Vámonos Ciclista, vámonos.
Steve Hockman is a Los Angeles-based writer who covers pop music for the California Report and KPCC. He reviewed Música por Puppets by Bicicletas por La Paz.
Please, please tell me, please, please tell me, please, please tell me now.
I'm Dave Kent, and I'm the general manager at Rockaway Records in Silver Lake, California. For 36 years, bringing you the best in music and music memorabilia, including Duran Duran. And that's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director is Susie Racho. The technical producer is Seal Muller. We had additional engineering from Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman. The online team includes David Marks, David Weir, Lisa Pickoff-White, Don Clyde, and Olivia Allen Price. Our interns are Laura Clivens and Natalia Estrada. The California Report's editorial team includes Victoria Malian, Ingrid Becker, Tyke Hendricks, and Holly Kernan. I'm Dave Kent.
And I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.
Support for the California Report comes from the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. More at irvine.org. The California Endowment, working to achieve health and justice for all. Learn more at calendow.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.